This is the Oil Sand Tech Podcast with Aaron Shearhart. The oil sand industry is the largest unconventional oil business in Canada. And on this podcast, we'll be interviewing people who are building products and building services that can improve the oil sands. We tell the story of how to build products and bring them to market. The Oil Sand Tech Podcast. And now, Aaron Shearhart.
The training that we're building, while it seems very cutting edge right now, is going to be the standard of the future, and we're just trying to stay ahead of the curve and think of how this turnkey solution can serve the industries.
It's my pleasure today to introduce Wade Carlson. Wade is the director of sales with Sirius Labs out of Edmonton, Alberta, and so Sirius Labs is a technology-based company. Currently focused on next generation training solutions through translating training solutions into kind of a gaming environment. They're able to effectively provide the best possible training to the target demographic that's kind of coming onto the market today. And so with that, Wade, thanks for joining me on the show and welcome.
Yeah, that's great. Thanks, Aaron. I appreciate you reaching out to me and having me on your show. And I think you hit it right on the head. Sirius Labs uses game mechanics and technology to get people excited and engaged in training. With people coming out of school these days and raised in a game world, using game consoles and games to get engaged, especially with the internet and the way that information flows around the education space, the old methods of training are kind of ineffective in some fashion to actually reach out to students of today. So we recognize that, and we're creating products that reach out and get those people engaged and excited about learning again. So, yeah.
It's certainly interesting for me. I'm kind of that generation to an extent, growing up around video games, and I've kind of stopped playing video games in the last 10 years or so, but it's certainly something that I go back to every once in a while. But so tell us a little bit more about one of the, like, for example, one of the products that you're building, or what does a video game based training simulator look like?
So that's a great question. Simulators, I guess if you distill it right down to what makes something engaging, it's about the experience that the user goes through to capture information, to have the learning and the outcomes that are desired to do their job, to be safe or whatever. So providing tools like simulators and like games that have learning built into them provide that kind of stage, or that medium that allow these people to capture all the information and retain it, because that's the key part, is especially in high risk jobs in the oil and gas world, where you may take your training this year and 2 to 3 years later you'll have to take that training again, but you need to retain the information that you've received 2 years ago. And if you're sitting in that room getting the information fed to you by an instructor, how much retention is actually there if you're not engaged, if it's just being spoon-fed to you and there's no interactivity or the experience is lacking? And so we've looked at that as a bit of a gap in training in the industries, and have started to take that theory and put it into game worlds. And so we use game technology, game engines, like the Unity game engine and the Unreal game engine. Unreal is put out by Epic and is on gaming consoles. AAA game developers use these engines to put out products for the entertainment space. We're just leveraging it for training. And so our team that builds these products very much looks like a game development house, much like BioWare that would be here in Edmonton for the entertainment space. So one of the products that we're actually working on right now is in the oil and gas space, and it's geared around building awareness and in the high-risk situation of underbalanced conditions. So teaching people to pay attention and be cognizant and aware of other service lines. So when you have multiple service lines on a lease site, whether it's a snubbing snubbing service line with a wireline service line working together to complete a job, they have to be aware of each other's roles and the intrinsic hazards that might be prevalent in a situation where they're both on the same lease site. So we're building out an entire online training program that will facilitate that kind of gap in training in the industry right now.
Great. So we talked briefly in the kind of the pre-interview chat about the gamification component. So I guess what kind of strategies do you use to make sure that people are fully engaged when they're using the product?
To build out a product that ends up being a game, we start from the beginning where we look at what is the outcome that you want that learner to come away with to do his job safely or to be competent in what they're doing. And those outcomes, that's the same sort of thing. If you create an instructional plan at the beginning with outcomes driving an instructor-led course, it's the same idea. We just take those outcomes and we derive game mechanics through our game design team to basically create sticky and engaging experiences. And so you may not even realize that you're learning something through, you know, some sort of a physics game that's teaching you center of balance on a piece of equipment, but you're shifting weights around that allow you to understand the physics behind center of balance and why it wouldn't be good to have a weight extended fairly far out there, even though it's a light weight, could still have catastrophic event on a piece of equipment that you've exceeded the envelope that equipment is allowed to operate under. So we're just building games that support learning concepts and drive the outcomes for that training.
It's very interesting as well, having it as an interactive function as opposed to just kind of like a classroom-based environment where you're memorizing kind of principles and then you're trying to apply it, and applying it's a little bit more difficult when you don't have that real-world kind of knowledge.
That's exactly it. And if what we've heard when we've done a bit of a market research is that especially in the oil and gas industry, typically in the instructor-led courses, the most engaging part and the piece that people take away is the story that instructor is telling. I lost this finger because I did whatever that is. And that's because it's hitting those students on an effective level. It's reaching out to them, and they're going, wow, that I don't want to lose my finger, and that sounds like a compelling story. And they'll walk away with that. And if that's the one piece they walk away with, great. But there's probably three other days that story doesn't cover that they may or may not retain. So we're trying to capture that information on an effective level and get people engaged and invested into the experience of this game so that everything that they do, the decisions that they make, have an outcome. And so you just think about any kind of game. You mentioned yourself, Aaron, that you played games growing up, and I, like you, have not played in 10 years, so mostly due to kids. But There's games that I've played back in the 80s that I remember vividly because I was engaged and I was invested in the game. And, you know, there's no critical reason why I should remember that information other than I was engaged at the time and it's burned into my memory bank. So the retention is very high. So if you, even if you look back to, animals and how they play to learn to hunt, that through that play gets them engaged. And so there's lots of studies that support the theory of games are more engaging and retention and the comprehension. All of that stuff is built in almost intrinsically into gaming.
So maybe if we could just briefly go into could you explain to us how one of these games looks like? I'm just looking or taking a look at your website here, and you've got a simulator where you've got a control panel, and on the control panel you've got a whole bunch of different buttons and some kind of joysticks and that kind of thing. So what would what does a simulator like that look like from a kind of a user perspective? Is it just like somebody is actually in the in the crane or in the bulldozer or a piece of equipment or control
right.
room, or how does that kind of work out?
Right. So what you're describing there on our website is a drilling simulator, and that's part of our competency line of training. So somebody who's becoming a drilling hand or a roughneck or something like that would actually go through a theory course, either online or instructor-led, and then that simulator that you're describing would put them through a scenario where they would have to operate a drilling rig and run pipe from a catwalk up to well center and then start drilling down the well. So that part is really about that specific simulator that you're describing is really about pipe handling and making the efficiencies of pipe handling happen. But that simulator is quite impressive in the sense that it's actually using like original equipment manufacturers, real industry systems such as PLCs, the programmable logic controllers, HMIs, and all of the third-party tools such as the CanRig Catwalk and any controller that would be tied to that. So it's bringing a lot of industry standard hardware into our game world, in which we've taken the drawings for that drilling rig, put them into our game engine, and connected all of the systems that drive the safety systems around crown savers and floor savers and ramping up of the top drive and all the different components that are around the safety. They're all built into the hardware and the industry standard stuff. And so we've integrated all of that stuff into our simulator, which gives the kind of that true-to-life experience. So that simulator specifically, we wouldn't consider a game so much as we would consider a competency trainer. The games that we're actually doing now are more geared around kind of critical functions of operating a piece of equipment. So you would put some sort of a game mechanic like time or actions or something that would be sticky for that individual and drive them to complete the game. So one of the games we've put out just recently, and we're looking at launching first quarter of 2015, is a life rules game. So it's based on a three-quarter view of a world that looks a lot like Q-Bert, I guess. And you manipulate a stick man figure through that world to complete a procedure, whether it's acquiring a work permit, acquiring PPE, talking to a site supervisor, completing some work, engaging in a confined space entry, and making sure that you have your buddy system going. So there's a bunch of game mechanics built into that we actually built into some of our other games. And that's kind of the pivot, Aaron, that I was mentioning before, is a couple of years ago, we were really focused on the simulators, building full drilling simulators and snubbing simulators and Caterpillar dirt handling simulators. And what we've decided is that it would be better to build games and put theory around what these people need to know to do their job, and then pull out the learning concepts that really need to be driven home and build games that support them. So it's hard to describe a game verbally, but that's kind of where we're headed. So
great. So maybe you could just briefly go back and touch on that again in terms of the, so how, with Sirius Labs, how did you start and how do you end up, I guess, where you are today?
Sure. So our company started back in 2006, and we were focused on, oddly enough, architecture. So we used game engines to do architectural drawings for houses. So if you were going to buy a house, you would go to a sales center, pick all of your materials, your colors, your floor plan, all that stuff, and we provided a tool set that allowed you to do that. Unfortunately, when we did that, took that on, it was right in the downturn of the the housing market, and so it kind of flopped. So we pivoted and took some of the tools that were born out of that that kind of venture, i.e. lighting and workflow. So we built our own lighting engine, and we started to look at what we could do for construction space. And we started working with Hertz, and Hertz is a rental company for small construction equipment, specifically aerial boom lifts, which are used in the oil sands, and they're used pretty much anywhere that construction might be going on. So it's a basket that a worker would stand in that is connected to a vehicle with a turret, and through hydraulic systems, the arms would lift that worker up into place to do his job or her job in some location. So lots of these pieces of equipment, so scissor lift, boom lifts, and telehandlers and various things like this. We started working with Hertz to build out an aerial boom lift simulator. And that simulator went down to Las Vegas at the construction exposition, the ConExpo. And when we were demoing it there, Caterpillar took note of what we were doing. And they had asked us what it would take to build dirt moving simulators, like a wheel tractor scraper or a small wheel loader. And so we took that project on, suggesting that it would take about 6 months to build out those simulators. I believe it took 9 months, and we launched the wheel tractor scraper. But what we learned through the process of working with Caterpillar and building out these simulators were that we're pretty good at building physics systems for combustion engines and hydraulics and dirt deformation. So we actually had to solve the problem of dirt, which is kind of an interesting thing to say, but cohesion and shear factor and conservation of mass from a piece of equipment to a dump pile were critical pieces to the puzzle of training a competent small wheel loader operator. So we took some time looking at that and came up with a solution that we're still working on today. That is being folded into more of our underground mining solutions as well. But we basically started to build credibility in the industry of construction for building simulators, to the point that CAE actually reached out to us, and we had a few meetings with them to talk about how we're doing it with commercial off-the-shelf computers versus big mainframes that they would be using for their flight simulators and whatnot. So completely different space for them and us, but it was interesting that we had made such a ripple that we were being noticed. And that credibility started to carry over into mining, and so we ended up working with Atlas Copco, building a Pit Viper blast drill for open pit mines. And we did the same sort of thing. We went out to a mine. We drove on these pieces of equipment, looked at the drawings, understood the mechanics and the physics and the engineering behind these pieces of equipment, had to solve the problem of drilling into bedrock and the resistance on bit and the wear on the bit and various things like this. So there was a lot of things we had to solve there that we hadn't solved before. So organically, we had kind of built a team of people that were extremely smart in various areas of physics and engineering and whatnot. We took on building hardware, so building control panels that interfaced with the software, because going with OEM equipment, they're very heavy and industrial and kind of overkill for what we needed. So we started to build lighter weight solutions and sourcing our own controllers, and then the aesthetic of the product actually jumped up quite a bit. And then they were also, you could ship them quite easily. We could build miniature versions for shipping around the world. So we started to get a lot of traction. But what we started to also realize is that the simulator world is a very narrow market for a high price point. So you're really starting to look at how do you make it more efficient, more cost effective on the development side so you can still be profitable and support all of your clients. And 90% of the time, any client that comes to you with a simulator problem typically wants one, two, maybe on the outside five. And so you have to look at that and go, well, for the amount of effort that you're putting in to create a simulator that is very specific to one piece of equipment, in the example of, say, a Caterpillar, a small wheel loader, the concept of a small wheel loader transfers, but the hardware is very specific to Caterpillar, and the processing around some of the systems that drive that piece of equipment are very different than, say, a Komatsu or various other pieces of equipment. So there's a substantial amount of work to create a product that applies across the board. And so we had to pivot yet again and look at what it is that we're trying to do, and it really did come down to getting engaging training to the masses. And so simulators could be a part of that process, but it would have to be a part of the assessment, if you're going to be a competent operator, you have to do a certain amount of actions on a piece of equipment verified by a practical evaluator. So that's kind of the shift. And then with that, we started to look at the online market and building out training from the theory perspective, and then adding the simulator. And that's kind of where we're landing with the oil and gas side. Is one of the simulators we built very early on in our company was a snubbing simulator. That the process of snubbing comes with some inherent risks, given that you're working on wells with surface pressure, and you're not reducing that pressure, or optimally you wouldn't be. Some of the shale gas wells you would, but you're ultimately, you don't want to make a mistake on a snubbing operation, because it usually ends in some catastrophic failure. So making sure that the operator is competent is critical. But what we realized as we worked with Snubco was that this is great for them, but this one product actually applies across the board, from boots and coots to any kind of end form, for instance, would do well to have this training product delivered in their school as well. It's a product that applies to any snubbing company. And we've had a lot of interest in that product, and we've taken it all over the world, into China and Australia and all through the States. And we've managed to sell a couple of licenses to Halliburton, and we've sold a couple more to various other companies, kind of really pushing the idea that competency is critical. But with those licenses, we've insisted that those simulators are tied back to an online training program that builds the theory and the understanding of what snubbing is and what a snubbing operator level one training looks like and what a snubbing assistant level one training looks like. And so that's kind of the direction that we're heading, so that you end up having a blended training experience where individuals can go online, take their theory in their own time, and make sure that their training is up to date, and then go and run the simulator with an assessor and make sure that they can actually do whatever they say they can, whether that's staging in a packer at 5,000 PSI or you know, running a string, snubbing a string in from, you know, RAM to RAM staging and that sort of thing. So there's various advantages to having a simulator that's built with the physics that we've built it to that allow trainers to actually run individuals that are in the real world through the paces of snubbing. So
that's quite a journey all the way from building homes, I guess, in 3D into like a full training solution.
Yeah, and that snubbing simulator was interesting because it was built to such a fidelity that Workers' Compensation Board leveraged it to prove out a competency assessment on an individual who was injured on the job, and he was a snubber at the time, and through his recovery, he wanted to go back and be a snubber, but they couldn't prove his competency without putting him on an actual lease site, and nobody was willing to do that. So Workers' Compensation leveraged the simulator over 10 weeks and assessed this individual to see if he was competent, and it turned out that he was, and he was able to go back out and be a snubber again. So there was some kind of unintended consequences of building our simulators to the degree that we do that actually allow industry to use them. And Snubco's done a really good job of promoting the simulator and the technology and building awareness in the industry. So we're pretty excited about where things are going, for sure.
So maybe we can just briefly move now into what is the kind of the impacts that you've seen of using the, I guess, this next generation kind of approach to training as opposed to the traditional classroom approach? Like, have you, maybe you can share with us an example of, has there been a time where there has been a big kind of improvement to do with the business or something to that extent?
Great question. So one of the verticals that we're in is the construction space, and we're partnered with United Rentals, and we've put together United Academy, which is an online training academy that delivers upwards of 60 different courses. A lot of them are instructor-led, but we've taken on a bunch of their main competency operator courses, namely the boom lift, the scissor lift, the rough terrain forklift, and the counterbalance forklift. And with those, we've built the theory and the theory for the training, and we've built in the games. And what was interesting is that this is an industry where the demographic is, you know, an older demographic. While they are kind of getting to that point where they will be retiring, a lot of them are very resistant to technology and trying to play games. None of them play games is the feedback that we've been given. But what was interesting is that once they got into the training and how engaged it is, the games were actually something that were really well received. The outcomes are we're still waiting to see a lot of the outcomes, given that we've just launched this product the beginning of this year. I guess not the beginning of this year, but the beginning of 2015, we'll be in full swing with all four products. We launched two in July, and the feedback has been very positive. We've won awards on some of the games that we've built in the Serious Games world. So while we don't have a lot of empirical data that has come back from some of the stuff that we've built, there is definitely empirical data in, say, the U.S. Army, who uses games for training their individuals. So it's something that we've really kind of taken as our vision, that this is the direction of training in kind of the future, and the future is not that far away. So e-learning has had a fairly bad stigma over the last, 7 to 10 years, mostly because the technology hasn't caught up to where training needs to be. But now I think we're there. The bandwidth is there. There's services like Amazon Web Services that allows distribution of content on a global basis, rich media content. There's game technology that allows you to build games that are online. So the training that we're building, while it seems very cutting edge right now, is going to be the standard of the future, and we're just trying to stay ahead of the curve and think of how this turnkey solution can serve the industries as the younger demographic starts to take the reins from the retiring group. We looked at a stat that said that there's 10,000 baby boomers retiring every day. So you think of the gap that might be happening there, and the knowledge that's disappearing as retirement happens. And how does that knowledge transfer go from those that are retiring down to those that are entering? That has to be done in a different way than, say, some senior fellow saying, "Look, I lost my thumb," or "see this broken bone," or whatever it is. That story can't be passed on, so how do you engage them in a different way? And that's where these games come in, and the rich media that we're delivering. So so that's where we're at.
And I think another interesting element that you kind of hit on there is the with AWS, Amazon Web Services, and these other online programs. I mean, it's no longer, you're not just building a training solution for those in Edmonton. You're building a training solution that can be used all over the world. And that's really powerful.
It is. It is. I mean, I spent some time over the last couple of years going back and forth to China, trying to do a bit of an assessment on what the demand is over there. And the training demand is very, very high. And to get training there through simulators or through schools is tough. You have North American, especially in the oil and gas world, you have North American regulations, IADC and CAODC and PSAC that offer up this training, but in China it isn't as recognized. It's a little more challenging to get that training to them, and so we're looking at it from a distribution level, being able to leverage AWS in Beijing and be able to deliver training there through a very engaging medium. Is just a recipe for success. So we know that's a market that's critical to us. We're actually heading to Beijing in the spring with a vertical slice of our product to start building awareness and understanding what the demand would be and get that uptake and start establishing those relationships with companies that we've met in the past to actually kind of get that market reach through a training center of some sort. So we've got a lot of irons in the fire that are kind of percolating as we go through this, and the likes of CNPC has been contacting us and wanting to know where we're at with things. So we've got a bit of traction, and we're pushing along as fast as we possibly can, because spring's coming fairly quick. So lots of exciting things for sure. But Amazon Web Services is definitely the way to go. We're not trying to solve our own LMS or our own distribution or create something that's already there. We're just leveraging the tools that are going to be there into the future as that market compresses and you see the likes of Amazon Web Services and the likes of Google kind of taking up the market share on distribution and that sort of thing. So co-location may not even be an issue at all.
Definitely. Actually, this podcast will be hosted on Amazon Web Services as well. And this is not an advertisement.
Well, there you go.
Yeah, so great, Wade. Thank you so much for joining me on the show today. And just before we kind of finish, I was wondering, what's the best way for one of our listeners to reach out to you if they'd like to kind of get in contact?
The best way to reach out to me would be through email at wade.carson@siriuslabs.com or through LinkedIn. And you can find me, Wade Carson, and I work at Sirius Labs.
Thank you so much for joining us on the show today. It's really interesting to get a glimpse into the future of training, and it's also exciting that you're building it right here in Edmonton. And so
it's pretty amazing for sure. Listen, Aaron, thank you so much for having me on your show, and I look forward to giving this a listen.
Thank you.